Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.
It's May 19th, 2015, and this is Inside Out, the Naked Truth, coming to you live right now from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing, by the way, is optional. That's right. But the truth is always apparently naked. I am Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. Welcome to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, several spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as possible. Our time tonight has been gifted by Go Raw, which means they sponsor us. 100% raw food that they make is not only delicious, but is good for you.
Go Raw can be found at Whole Foods. And by the way, they've got a whole new look, a whole new logo. I saw it today. Check it out. The food looks so good on the website that I almost went right through my computer to just get a nibble, but I restrained myself just in time.
Good, because you would have been very disappointed.
Just wouldn't taste like what I would be hoping it would taste like, which would be Go Raw natural foods. And they've got an interesting thing on their website about why sprouts, because that's so much of what their food is made of, and the whole health thing. It's really informative. I'm going to go back and read it tomorrow because I haven't read it in a while. Thank you. Go Raw. It's so interesting because Rochelle and I have two particular traits that kind of clash.
I beg your pardon?
Exactly. And that's why it's our program tonight is called I Beg Your Pardon, because we're going to just do a bunch of I Beg Your Pardons.
I beg your pardon, please.
We've been looking for phrases that have a riff to them that you can keep returning to them.
I beg your pardon.
So we thought this would be an interesting one to take a look at because it just really means a lot of different things.
Especially because people feel sorry all the time. So it seems only natural that they beg someone's pardon because they need to be forgiven.
That is clearly one aspect of I beg your pardon. By the way, I beg your pardon because I just put ice in my mouth. Then I really do have to beg your pardon.
Because you're hearing him all muddled.
That was a double beg your pardon, by the way. You get extra credit in the forgiveness segment of your next journey toward the ineffable.
Ineffable?
Yeah, the ineffable.
Like ineffable response.
I think it's a great word to talk about the ineffable.
Beg your pardon?
The ineffable one, to be exact. The word ineffable, just say it. Listener, humor me. Just say it. What does it mean to you, Rochelle?
Ineffable?
Yeah.
It has something to do with a quality. Ineffable, look it up right now. Google it so I don't come out sounding like a fool.
Too great or extreme to be expressed or described in words.
Uh-huh, see, I knew that.
Beg your pardon? So we're going to shut our mouth for the rest of our time together, but I hope you will still continue to listen.
I beg your pardon, friend. Impossible.
Okay, impossible. So when you think about the infinite, the ineffable, that which is too great or extreme to be expressed or described in words, you carry a bunch of these words around with you, and you put them on your experiences. They're like in a suitcase, if you can imagine. They're all kind of scrambled in there, and you very quickly assemble them and post them on the picture of the box top, like of your reality. And that's what you relate to.
Having an ineffable reality, isn't that wonderful?
That's what I was about to say. You're walking up.
Walking up where?
To the gate.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm not going to walk. I'm going to float.
Okay, it's the gate of your next thing, whatever that is. But you have to leave your box, your baggage full of words behind, because you can't take them into the ineffable sphere, because they won't fit anywhere. They're utterly inadequate.
They're material.
And their references are all material.
So you can't take the material into the immaterial, or the finite into the infinite.
You heard that here, folks. You cannot take... Wait a minute.
Oh, he's going to wait a minute. I beg your pardon. What do you mean, wait a minute?
I beg your pardon. The only difference between the finite and the infinite are the letters IN. Think about it. There's infinite, and then there's finite. But those are not, just because they're small letters and only like a two-letter word, doesn't mean that it doesn't have some power. The word in, you add the word in to the word finite.
And you got a lot.
Well, it's very busy expanding every which way. The ineffable.
And it's ineffable. Not only is it infinite, it's ineffable.
I tell you why I like to go and hang out in that kind of focus or orientation, which is why we live the way we do, and which is why Rochelle finds it so easy to get along with me.
I beg your pardon. The truth is, I do find it easy to get along with you. Yeah. I find it easier to get along with you than anybody I know, except when I'm not getting along with you.
Right. There are those moments. But part of why we do this program, and those of you who are listening, will pray for you.
I beg your pardon, Errol. That's terrible.
Okay. Erase that from the jury's point of view, is to do exactly the opposite of what we just said. Try to use words to describe the ineffable. That, to me, is what I, as a poet, even as we converse here on this program, always trying to do, is to find a combination of words that
describes the ineffable.
Yeah, yeah. Like one little poem I wrote that was an attempt to describe the ineffable in some kind of human terms. It was called On a Walk. On a walk or pacing, when I want to focus in to perceive him, her, as I stare down on the concrete, grass, dirt, mesmerized, the sweet inner stare of the unknown father filters up to me as into nothing. And as I go within, I realize that, guess what? I am accompanied.
Don't worry, Mother. It'll be all right. Don't worry, sister, say your prayers and sleep tight, and it'll be fine, lover of mine, it'll be just fine. I've heard your anguish, I've heard your heart cry out. We are tired, we are weary, but we aren't worn out. Set down your chains till only faith remains. Set down. But if praying were enough, it would have come to be. Let your words enslave no one, and the heavens will hush themselves to hear. Our voices ring out clear with sounds of freedom. Oh, oh. Come on, you unbelievers, move out. There is a new army coming, and
Life Uncommon by Jewel. Those are some interesting lyrics. Lend your voices only to the sounds of freedom. What are the sounds of freedom? What do you think they are?
Ineffable.
I thought it was like oink and moo and chirp chirp.
In my interpretation, it would be that the sound of freedom is a sound of love.
It's silence. That's the irony.
But it's the love. It's love itself. That's the only thing that truly can help you be free, is love itself.
Here's the deal.
Can you have a deal?
Such a deal. I got my brother-in-law, Alfie. Alfie, come here. Can you talk about the deal? Oh, yeah, deal. We got such a deal. It's like, I'm going for you, like you had this whole box of the ineffable. You like that word, the ineffable, which is the whole everything that exists in which you are also existing inside that box. But it's not really a box because it doesn't have closures. So there is no closures. No matter how far you walk in the universe and in which way you're walking, you'll never see a closure. It's always room to go another step. Another step universe, the other universes used to call it.
So I would call it infinite.
This is good. This is an infinite is a good word for it.
Unfolding, that's the word I was...
I was just going to say it's only slightly less inadequate than all the other words you've all been using over and over and over again for century after century. But that's another thing. We love words.
I beg your pardon.
Uh-huh. Tell me, why is my pardon being begged?
Because I haven't been here for centuries and centuries that I know of. I can assume that I might be, but I don't remember anything, not really. But I do remember a lot of things about this time of my life.
Yeah?
On this planet, in this body. I can remember as far back as 1 or 2 years old.
I can think back to yesterday before lunch.
You're really way ahead of this.
I wanted to make sure I included that lunch in my memory.
Ah, took a mental picture of it.
Yeah, I factored it in. What I did was a double take. That's what you do when those kinds of things happen. When you think about a double take, you ever see a character do a double take? I practice them as an actor. And I could do like a triple, quadruple double take. I could never do more than 2 pirouettes, but by golly, I could do a quadruple double take.
I'm so happy for you.
But a double take, you pass something almost not noticing it or giving it a small amount of attention and interest. But your mind is taking what it is. For example, there might be a chocolate bar heading your way from over there to your left. When you walk by, you just, oh, it's a chocolate bar. But then when you get just not even a step away, your head goes back to it because you realize that
it's a floating
chocolate bar coming your way. And that causes a double take.
I can't even beg your pardon on that one.
No,
I like it too much. Just the thought of a chocolate bar floating towards my mouth without having to do a thing and having it be delicious. That's really nice. Certain things in life definitely cause you to salivate. Thinking about salivating, they used to have pickles in a barrel in brine outside of this little pickle store where I grew up. And you were about a block away, and all of a sudden I'd start to salivate. And I wouldn't know why until I got a little closer and I realized the pickle barrels were out in front of the store. That's how far away those things came to me. It's like the lure of love, the lure of heaven is like that. As I get close to it, I start to salivate.
What I want to share with you listeners is that's how Rochelle got in the Guinness Book of Records. Just bear with me. She started salivating further and further away. And in the who could start salivating for the pickles category, all the other contestants.
I beg your pardon, Daryl Strider. That's not true. Don't believe him. He makes up things.
That's what we like to do on Inside Out. And just to remind myself, if not the rest of you who are partaking of this conversation, we're entertaining the notion that, like the infinite, we are, each of us, an integral part of that infinite because we've entered the domain of consciousness. And it's like consciousness is your get-out-of-jail-free card.
Beg your pardon?
Consciousness is your get-out-of-jail-free card in the sense that it's like a bypass on a freeway. It allows you to bypass all the mishigash, that's Yiddish for all the insane craziness of life. To bypass it, consciousness, think about what consciousness gives you. There's your raw experience. And then there's this whole mental activity that you overlay on it in response to need, adjustments, influences. Very busy. I love the fact that she talks about the value of faith. Jewel, there is a new army coming, and we're armed with faith. To live, we must give. That is such a fabulous definition of what faith is. To live, we must give. That's as good a definition as I've had today. I had one yesterday, Rochelle. This is Toby. And I had a visitation, actually. I was up there in my room. I was painting the cupboard up there and kind of gotten old after all these years. I was scratching my head and I was thinking, my, if I go on forever, what are they going to have for me to do to keep me busy?
Toby, it's the walk itself. You might as well enjoy it.
Okay, I could see that walking up there and walking down the road. But the question I ask myself is, how does it change how I live this life, knowing that there is no ending to my life? And what is the value of having that piece of information? It's very liberating. And that's the voice of freedom I think she was talking about. Something like that. Thank you, Toby. That was interesting.
Toby, you are a strange man.
You have a unique way of expressing yourself, and we appreciate it. Don't get us wrong.
The people that drop into this house is too much sometimes. Bar the door.
That was the thing that between Rochelle and I that I find so interesting, and that is she's Charlotte. Explain to the audience.
I will not. I beg your pardon. I won't do that at all. I'd be embarrassed.
Okay. I will explain who Charlotte is. That was so quick. See, I'm humbled. My wife slipped one in there. Did you notice there was not even a beat before she said that line? It was almost like it was written. But it is written. And then we have all these words. Charlotte is the character from Sex and the City.
Charlotte is a very proper person.
The brunette who ensnared Harry. Remember Harry toward the end of the season? Was it Harry, the bald guy?
He was very sweet.
Good actor.
Okay, we're giving the reruns of Sex and the City a plug tonight.
Okay. Let's get back on track again.
I beg your pardon. That's the track.
I beg your pardon. Right. I beg your pardon? Who is it? Oh, it's Old Timer. Well, come on in. Sit down, Old Timer. I begged a lot of pardons in my day. I knew a fellow in Cincinnati who had to pardon him three times. He was a real son of a bitch. But he kept coming up and just kicking me in different parts of my anatomy. And I definitely wanted to kick him back. So when he kicked me the third time, I just said, I beg your pardon? Well, that just sent him back. It's the last thing he expected for me to beg your pardon. turns out that's what he wanted all along, which is why he was kicking me. He wanted my pardon. He wanted to see me beg for his pardon so he could forgive me. And I did. I said, I beg your pardon. I'm on my knees begging your pardon so that I don't get hit by the pardon warden cop guy.
Old timer, you're fun. You can visit us anytime.
Thanks, old timer.
It's almost as silly as you are, Errol. Is he, what, he's your father or something?
What do you think? I'm going to bring friends into my life. Speaking of friends into my life, I really need to stop and honor a very, very wonderful man. One of the most wonderful men I've ever met. Passed away just recently, I found out. And he lived up in a tent outside of Fairfax, where we lived for 16 years. And he'd lived in a tent up in the hills of one kind or another for 40 years of his life. He could get ornery, but usually he had the sweetest demeanor. And he really expressed that love. I felt it anyway. I felt that he was a being who had learned the lessons that allowed him not to care about, I won't say he didn't care about worldly stuff, but his desires and needs were very minimum. He lived in this tent, and he never worked, didn't have an address, telephone, 40 years, always walking around. And even a couple of times he came over to our house, he's just like he couldn't wait to get outside. We'd walk outside and sit cross-legged on our porch or just to get out. And yet, I went up to this place many times, and on the tent floor, there were World War II airplane models, dozens of them. I kid you not.
I beg your pardon.
And a variety of other interesting choices that a man who has a tent and kind of a tarp over it, and it's not even a tent that you can stand in. It's a low tent that if you're sitting in it, your head will hit the top. This was Stu. And he'd come down to town every day and engage. I met him because, this is a story he told me, I was in the little coffee shop near where we lived, and I was reading, I think, one of the Conversations with God books. And later, after I got to know Stu, he told me when he saw me reading the Conversation with God book, he kind of rubbed his hands like, oh boy, I've got a real live seeker right here. Oh boy. And he'd often say it was lonely at the top because he lived in that consciousness. He was pretty present most all the time. He used to call himself Captain Now. As a matter of fact, the only way I knew how to get a hold of him, it was to walk over to his place. So I went over there one day, and it's just off this dirt road, and then you climb up into the woods, up a couple hundred yards maybe, but it's up and it's windy around trees. They can't see my hand doing that?
No.
I thought they could. You don't see it? My hand's doing like windy movements up and down the trees.
Stu was an amazing, unique human being. We loaned him a shower and he supped with him and talked with him many times.
I think
times.
We insisted that he shower, actually.
Yes, because he really smelled bad. Despite his amazing clarity about life, the one thing I remember most, he said, if you stand online long enough, you'll get to see the movie. I love that. Something about that line always allows me to be a little bit more patient when I get impatient and want things to happen right away. I remember, stand online long enough, you'll get to see the movie.
Let me know if you'd like to meet Stu, estrider@gmail.com. I'd love for him to be known. He was in a book, and I wish I could remember. It was a very famous book of the 60s. I went and bought it for him because his picture was in it with this girl, and it was a very poetic experience, and I went and made it for him. And I don't know what happened to his belongings, but that would be something I'd love to have as a picture of him from that book. Mm-hmm. Bless you, Stu. Thank you for being such a huge contributor to our, certainly my growth in awareness and being consistently present. Captain Now. So that's what I put on the tree when I wanted to get his attention. I had a little piece of paper laminated that said, Captain Now, come.
He saw that. He knew you were waiting for him. That's very sweet.
So what else are you begging the universe's pardon for?
A pardon like an exoneration.
Yeah.
It's like you're forgiven. So if you beg the universe's pardon. You're asking for total forgiveness. You're asking to be seen without judgment. You're asking to be held without malice of any kind. You're asking to be forgiven. What happens when you beg the universe is pardon. You stand before your maker naked, just like at Lupin.
You can't take pretense in there. Pretense, like there's past tense, and there's future tense and present tense. Now there's pretense.
Oh, Errol, that is so, beg your pardon.
But wait, there is reason to my choice of language there. Actually, Reginald, would you mind helping her out so she can understand I'm not the only one who thinks this way? Could you explain what was the subject again that we were just addressing?
Begging the universe's pardon, forgiveness.
Yeah, forgiveness. So you were going to explain about the pardon. What I would say about the begging part is that so many people are reluctant to beg. Begging feels like it's beneath them, which if you're tall and have to get on your knees and beg, well, they're quite right. It is actually beneath them, and so they have to go down to the lower aspect of themselves and beg. In other words, it's like a dog that turns its stomach up. Think about that the next time you are begging forgiveness or begging pardon. Think of yourself as like that dog with his tummy up. All you really want is a nice scratching of the tummy. Really. When it gets right down to it, allow yourself to have that scratching of the tummy, because like any parent who loves to make raspberries on the little baby's tummy and watch them giggle, one wants to suck up more and more of the universe, and as it should be. Thank you. That was very
insightful.
Well,
maybe not.
I don't know. I have to think about it. I wasn't sure I totally understood it, to tell you the truth.
I think what he was saying was, when you're begging for a pardon, when you're begging for forgiveness, you're like this little puppy. He used the word dog. I would use the word puppy because it's sweeter. This little puppy with its legs up, so its belly is exposed and it's asking to have its belly rubbed or scratched. When you do that, the dog feels so yummy and it just kind of does doggy things like That is what it feels like when the universe is forgiving you. That's what I thought he said.
Thank you, Rochelle. Whatever it is, it's gentle. That's one way you recognize it. It's really gentle on your mind.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. Makes me tenderly by sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. Knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words or bonds or the ink stains that have dried upon some line. It keeps you on the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind. Not clinging to the rocks and I've planted all the columns now that binds me. Something that somebody said because they thought we fit together walking. It's knowing that the world will not be cursing and forgiving as I walk along the railroad track and find. You're moving on the back roads by the rivers of my memory. For I was just gentle on my mind. Though the highways and the wheat fields and the clotheslines and the junkyards come between us. Some other woman crying to her mother cause she turned and I was gone. I still might run in silence, tears of joy might stain my face. The summer sun might burn me till I'm blind. And not to where I cannot see, walking on the back roads by the rivers flowing gentle on my mind. I tip my cup of soup back from a gurgling, crackling cauldron in some train yard. My beard roughened in a coal pile, a dirty hat pulled low across my face. Cupped hands around a tin can, I pretend to hold you to my breast and find. You're waving from the back roads by the rivers of my memory, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
That was Gentle on My Mind, and the singer was Tim O'Brien. That begins to answer some of the questions that we've been asking and raising in terms of what he says. Though the wheat fields and the clotheslines and the junkyards and the highways come between us, and some other woman's crying to her mother because she turned and I was gone, I still might run in silence. Tears of joy might stain my face, and the summer sun might burn me till I'm blind. But not to where I cannot see you walking on the back roads by the rivers, flowing gentle on my mind. And that's how he ends it. He says, through cupped hands round the tin can, I pretend to hold you to my breast and find that you're waiting from the back roads by the rivers of my memories, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
Very sweet. That's a love song.
It was interesting in the book Keys of Yeshua, which I've spoken of, and I'm going to speak of it again now.
Because you speak of it always.
My mucho of speaking of that point of view, because I like it. Now I forgot, with that little departure, I forgot what I was going to say.
I beg your pardon.
About that thing. No, well.
Oh, great. If you're all like me, you're just sitting here salivating, wondering why he's not going to finish that sentence.
It'll come back.
They always say that.
Inside Out, The Naked Truth. It'd be interesting to go through a crowd of people and say, hello, I'm a host of Inside Out, The Naked Truth. And each one would say, I beg your pardon? I beg your pardon? I could see every one of them doing that, like, I beg your pardon?
I know you. I listen to that program. You're the guy who does that?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's yes. Really neat.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Where's your wife?
She's out shopping.
I probably really like her a lot.
I beg your pardon?
That's right.
See how it works? You just kind of flip in and out of that I beg your pardoning nuts. We were talking about the inevitable. We were talking about our role in the phenomenon of existence and the inevitableness. And yet, it is the most substantive of that which is most substantial. The reason it is so is because it is motion itself. We tend to think in our very early stage of development, the more solid something is, the more substantial it is. Of course, with the advent of our tools that allow us to see how everything is spinning around at vast speeds, actually, that is the motion of the universe. The big shift is to recognize our life, especially feel where the security for our life is not in that which is massive, full of mass, hard, defined edges,
solid,
but in motion and movement itself. All that's happening in the universe is a dance. You're either dancing or you're on the sideline being a flower of the wall.
So let me ask you something, Mr. Strider.
Yes, Miss Strider.
When one's emotional body is pricked, how does this motion and the understanding of everything you're saying play a part in healing and moving us forward and expanding our consciousness?
I love that question. Could you say it again? No, I understand the question because I've been in the middle last, leading up to it several weeks, but certainly the last 24 hours. And I'm going to start with the opening line of the movie. The character says, "I had a shame attack today."
I beg your pardon.
And then we go 48 hours earlier and we pick up the scene. You know, what caused the shame attack? What I got to see is how when people express themselves in a certain way to me, it pushes my fear button. It's very old. I can feel it's like way inside there. It's the inner child's inner child. That's how old it is.
I beg your pardon.
It's just an old wound, and I know it has to do with my mom and stuff like that, and you don't want to get into that. Well, no, we don't want to hear all that craziness about your life, Mr. Strider. Could you just stay on point? Okay. This person that I frequently am with pushes that button. I don't know. Did she buy one on eBay? Did they still sell them, Errol's Buttons? You know, I thought they sold them out already, but evidently they were still available.
You were beginning to think they were an extinct species.
Yeah. And then when I had this button pushed, I could feel my heart beating, this fear. Of course, my first impulse, I think you all will recognize this, is to blame.
I beg your pardon.
Is to project it out, all the reasons why I blame her, and it's her fault. And then my wife, who slapped me around the head 2 or 3 times.
I do not ever do that physically.
No, Charlotte, nobody thinks you do it physically. Although, just between us, there were a couple occasions.
No.
So I was thrust into that fear and actually give thanks to my good spouse because she really held her ground. Because I went into my reaction defense. Well, don't lecture me. And she said, "I am going to lecture you." And I went, "Oh, okay." And then sure enough, she lectured me.
It was a very good lecture.
It was a great lecture. Caring, and she didn't have her own personal guilt ambivalence. That's something we work to overcome a lot. You want to say something about that ambivalence of guilt? And I shouldn't, but I want to in that whole dynamic.
Well, you just said it.
I beg your pardon?
It's that ambivalent. You feel like you want to say something, then you say something, but maybe you shouldn't have said something, so you feel guilty for saying something, even though you had to say it because it was so important for you to say. Oh, my God, now somebody's going to get mad at you for saying it, and why did you say it? And you stirred up this can of worms, and now they're crawling all over you, and...
And the worms turned into a shame attack.
That's right.
That's how I got there.
Beg your pardon?
When you have a shame attack, you want to hide. Next time you have a shame attack, check it out. See if your impulse isn't to hide because you feel so unworthy of being seen. I could feel that come over me today. I feel those worms knotting themselves up and a big finger pointing at me. You should be ashamed of yourself.
And you should be bigger than that. You should know better. You should be this or that.
You should be strong.
Strong.
Yeah, not some weak.
Having a shame attack is bad enough.
Fear is bad enough, but then you add the shame attack.
If the shame gets too big,
yeah,
you can always blame somebody.
That's why we recommend blame. We recommend it as the first phase of the battle. Because at this point, you don't really know who the enemy is. You think it's that person over there that apparently is causing you all this discomfort. But they're just a movie that's flashing before your eyes. And you, to the degree that that past incident, and I think this is critical, has never been forgiven. It's a
wound. You have to beg its pardon.
Exactly. For many of us, we have to face the sorrowful part of our lives in order to reclaim that part, to bring it back to life. Sorrow is a tough thing.
Hill to whole Kentucky, the
place where I was born and bred. The place where he was born and bred. Four, 6 long years I've been in trouble. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends.
Was Alison Krauss and the Union Station, Man of Constant Sorrows. Normally she sings, she's got some great songs. We may have played them before and we'll play her again. She is actually playing fiddle on that tune. You may have recognized Alison's fiddling. That too has some interesting lines, especially the last four of that piece. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you will never see no more. But there is one promise that is given. I'll meet you on God's golden shore. Now, the golden shore is a paradox. You think of a shoreline where the water meets the land. But in the ineffable place, the infinite, the shore is always meeting the shore. It's just infinite shore, shoring of itself on the shore.
Why can't it be infinite water?
Okay. Just as well.
As I was listening to that song, and I don't know why it triggered this, but realizing that when you beg pardon of the universe, there's the realization that no pardon is necessary.
Beg your pardon?
Because we're human. We don't have to be forgiven for being human.
I just thought of another use of the word pardon. The wars of large periods, but I remember reading about it in the war around 1812. French were fighting the British and all that whole period. If he were captured, he would give his pardon, which was his word, that he would not try to escape. These were ostensibly men of honor who did keep their promise not to escape. Rochelle just spied an ant.
An ant. Ant is a vowel. You say an ant, you don't say a ant.
Beg your pardon?
We are overcome by ants.
We're overcome by pardons.
We have so many ants crawling down a wall that I had to get things to them go away.
But I went online and I found some software that teaches you how to speak ant.
So we could have a conversation.
I asked them, what are you doing? Especially, there was this one spot on the wall where they like kind of all got together. It looked like they were having
a convention.
A conference. And so I tried to listen in because, you know, they're small. Normally you can't hear them very well. But when they were all talking at once.
I beg your pardon.
They were. And you know what they were talking about? Let me see if I can kind of replicate. It was something like this. The ineffable. How's the ineffable?
I beg your pardon, honey.
Yeah.
Oh, you are so silly. But it just won't fly.
Oh, okay.
Because they're hands.
Yeah. Well, they do fly. We got some
flying.
Flying ants. Yeah, I never knew there were flying ants.
I think they're carpenter ants, are flying ants.
Yeah. Yeah, but how do they carry all those tools?
If you people know how to get rid of carpenter ants, please email us at eastrider@gmail.com and tell us how to get rid of carpenter ants.
I don't mean to take up more of our time here. This is Toby again. But we were like listening to y'all, and I don't know. Some of what you had all to say sounds like you're deluded. Do you ever think about that, that you're just full of delusion?
I beg your pardon?
Now, I'm not saying you are deluded. I'm just saying that you could come up with some very good reasons by observing you folks to think that, yeah, they're deluded. For example, to not resist mass resistance and thinking that there's something else? I don't know about that. Y'all listening out there, don't just accept what these folks just say there just because they say it. They've only been on this planet just a short amount of time like the rest of us, so you just listen real careful to what they have to say. Thank you. Thanks, Toby.
That's Toby?
Yeah. Okay.
Toby shows up every now and then. Toby's our...
Devil's advocate?
Yeah, the devil's advocate. Toby,
yeah, he is. We want to give all points of view a say on our show, even yours out there. You may have a point of view that's been sagging, and we've got something for sagging points of view that'll just perk them right back up.
Beg your pardon.
Sagging points of view.
I think this is turning out very strange. You should stop talking about the sagging points of view and go to someplace else, because I know you're going to get into trouble.
I am going to refer to erect points of view.
Oh, my God. We're in for it now. Charlotte and me is having a hard time.
You can take it any way you want, but I'm talking about hanging points of view or erect ones. And when they're erect, they're like ready, as you know, kind of comes with, well, that kind of an erection.
I've left the building.
I beg your pardon?
When you go there, I can't go with you. I might be able to come with you, but I can't go with you. Oh, I said that. Pretend you didn't hear it. Everyone close
she
your ears.
Said it.
Close your ears. I never said that.
No. I'm embarrassed now. I'm Charlotte.
Rochelle. Oh, my God.
Don't say that. This is people listening. We're in public.
Public?
Yeah, it's so embarrassing. God. Take it away. Take it away from your thought. Wipe it away. If you'd see me now, my hands are waving and my knees are turned into each other and my feet are turned into each other, too. And they're bouncing against each other. But
that's probably
more information than you need. So let's kind of wind up our program. We're not ready to close out, but pretty soon let's do a recap. We're going to bring in Alma, who's our sports announcer. She's watching live here, and she always has great commentaries. So, Alma, what would you make of, the Inside Out and the whole thing here?
All I can tell you all, listeners, if you're listening to Inside Out, The Naked Truth, out of every four ridiculous things they have to say, you'll get a gem. So we're giving an A to the gem we can take home.
Well, okay. Thank you, Alma.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm not sure to give A all the way around, but
I said one out of four gets an A.
But what did the other three get? Were they like
I don't
B?
Even want to talk about the other three.
Okay.
They're not worthwhile.
Oh my God. You're tough.
You ask me.
Wow.
I'll tell you.
Okay. Speaking of tough, if you're in a tough point in your life right now and you need some perspective, you let us know, eastrider@gmail.com, and go to our website, thelaughingheart.org. We've got some videos up there, some funny sketches we've done in the past, and the purpose of The Laughing Heart is to promote laughing heartedness as the gospel of the ineffable one. Does that work?
It gets close.
Okay. Oh, we got to wrap it up here. We're going to just go ahead and close it out. But folks,
remember, what? Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
I beg your pardon?
Hmm.
Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on job one for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit UniverseSpirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.